Blog Talk Radio.
This is, in fact, the Pro Wrestling Torch live cast for Sunday, March 18th, 2018. I am your host, Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, for Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchLiveCast.com. Lot to do today. A lot of stuff going on in the wrestling world, especially as we build to WrestleMania 34 here just 3 short weeks away. And don't forget, each week we go on the air at 8 p.m. Eastern live on PWTorchLiveCast.com unless there is a WWE pay-per-view such as WrestleMania. So in 3 weeks, we'll be going on the air live taking your phone calls at the conclusion of WrestleMania. Just wanted to get that plug in there at the start of the show in case I forget as we go on, because I said we have a lot going on, and it is my pleasure to welcome for, I believe, on the first time on the live cast, PWTorch.com columnist, collectibles columnist, Michael Moore is on the show. Michael, thanks for joining me this evening.
Absolutely, Greg. Thanks for having me on.
And, Michael, before we get into the big shows in professional wrestling, which is kind of how we like to focus our show here on Wrestling Night in America, I want to allow you to kind of talk about the work you do for the Torch, covering the collectibles scene in professional wrestling, and kind of talk about how long you've been writing for the Torch and what got you started in the collectibles racket.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I started writing for the Torch in January of 2011. So it's been quite a few years. Wade had just put out a call for some freelance writers, and I was looking for something a little bit different to do. I actually have a background in journalism, was a newspaper writer slash editor from about 1999 to about 2009. And then once the had the whole Great Recession thing going on, I started looking for something a little bit more stable and made a move into state government. But I've always been a big writer and done my what I could to do some freelance writing in some different arenas. I had written previously for Beckett Sports Publications, which is kind of the go-to guide for trading cards and collectibles, for about 7 years. Wrote also briefly for Tough Stuff, which was another similar publication, which went out of business. And then I also wrote for Pro Wrestling Illustrated for about 2 or 3 years in about 2008. So I was looking for something a little bit different to do, a little bit more laid back, that would kind of go with my work schedule a little bit, and really focus on my two loves, I guess, which are wrestling and collectibles, especially trading cards, action figures, all that kind of stuff. I've been a wrestling fan since 1985 and a card collector about as long. I remember buying packs of 1985 Topps cards right after I got into wrestling. So yeah, I've been doing that ever since, and always looking for interesting, unique stuff to cover. I always like talking about some of the more different things that are out there with, as far as collectibles, things that people have, especially older things that have really have lasted a long time, older, whether it's trading cards or pieces of memorabilia or whatever that may be.
Yeah, that was going to kind of lead into my next question. I know you write a lot about trading cards. You write a lot about figures. What else can folks look for when they delve into your column as far as other types of collectibles that you may write about on a frequent basis?
I really enjoy kind of getting challenged with some things that are a little more obscure. One of the first columns I did for the Torch, within the first year anyway, was a guy who had purchased one of the turnbuckles from WrestleMania 20 from the main event with Benoit and Shawn Michaels and Triple H, that was sold by WWE, signed by World Health. They thought it was worth, and with anything Benoit, it's a tough call. Some people will say it's worth a lot of money. Other people say, why would you want to touch that? So things like that are always pretty cool. I did an article on foam fingers, those types of things a while back. I have still – one of the things that got me into writing was the wrestling magazines right after I started got into wrestling. I would pick up everything I could find from the Apter mags to the Jordan Napolitano mags and kept a lot of those. And I was going through one night and found a couple of old WWF magazines that had their merchandise catalog in it. And so I kind of – I've done a couple things on that where I've gone through the merchandise catalog and kind of, you know, what's this merchandise worth today? You know, if you bought a – at one point, I remember that you would get a stack of like four autographs for $10, and everybody from Jake Roberts to Hulk Hogan to the Bushwhackers. So, what's the stuff worth now? That kind of stuff. I like seeing, you know, old ring-worn gear. I've written on VHS tapes, which it seems to me like the market has really softened a little bit the last couple years. But a couple years ago, there was a couple of Crockett tapes really that were just astoundingly going for $200 and $300, which I thought was pretty cool.
Interesting. Yeah, that is VHS tapes, you know, with so many people leaving the VCR behind, I'm sure they are in hot demand for the ones that are out there. If I'm not mistaken, you've interviewed some pretty high-profile people for your pieces as well. Kind of talk about some of the people you've interviewed for your collectibles column over the years.
Yeah, so I really like talking to people who also have collectibles interest themselves, whether that be wrestling memorabilia or other things. I mentioned a couple of days ago on Twitter that there's two people, and I won't give them both away. One of them is Kevin Nash. And the other one you will find out in about a week or so. There's two people I really wanted to interview when I started this column, and not because I'm necessarily the biggest fan of their work or anything like that, but they both have some really cool collecting stories of their own, and I was able to finally set one of those up about a week ago. So that'll be coming in about a week. But I've interviewed Christopher Daniels, was a lot of fun with his interest in comic books and things like that. Recently did an interview with Selena De La Renta, who's a really young, hot prospect in the Florida Indies right now. Some of the others, Don West was a lot of fun because I think anybody who remembers Don West from the Shop at Home days, hawking baseball cards on there.
Oh, yeah.
So it was really cool getting to talk baseball cards, and he's a Chicago Bears fan, and talking football memorabilia and wrestling memorabilia and things like that. But they've been a lot of fun. Lanny Poffo was a lot of fun. That was still when he had a the Poffo family, I guess, had a very contentious relationship before Macho Man was put into the Hall of Fame. And so he gave me a pretty strong quote about the Hall of Fame that I know Wade ran with. So he was a lot of fun. SoCal Val, Ivelisse, she was a lot of fun. Blue Meanie was really cool because he, a bit older than me, but kind of grew up on the same thing as far as the WWF and the AWA action figures from the 80s that he you know, kind of shared some stories about that. Those guys were all a lot of fun.
Awesome. Yeah, that's quite an eclectic group of folks that you've had the pleasure of interviewing over the years, which is really neat and certainly adds to your writing. Your collection, I mean, what did you start collecting with? Because I know some people, whether it's wrestling, whether it's any kind of other sport or entertainment or even comic books, it can be kind of daunting to look at all that's out there and try to find out where to start. So from your own personal experience, what did you start collecting? And in your collection that you may have today, what's the most interesting piece that you have that you could share with us?
When I was a kid, when I started and get through college and things like that, had friends who were collectors and would buy anything and everything. And I think the best thing you can do is buy what you like and buy what interests you. There are people out there who are completists and have to have every action figure that's out there. I started with the WWF trading cards, as I mentioned, and just kind of grew from there. I'm a lifelong Denver Broncos fan, and so kind of set out probably about 15 years ago to get an autograph of every significant Broncos player throughout the team's history, dating back to 1960, and have pretty much done that. I've kind of given up the last couple of years, one, because a big part of it is the quality of signatures has just dropped off the face of the earth. I mean, these guys are signing initials at best, and sometimes you get a squiggly line, which you can certainly see with some wrestlers too. But I've kind of have narrowed my focus a lot the last couple of years. I collect what I can find of Japanese wrestling cards, which is a little tough to do. If they do show up on, there's a company called BBM, which is a big baseball card manufacturer out of Japan. And they did New Japan and All Japan and NOAH and Dragon Gate cards for years. The New Japan cards stopped in 2011, but in that time, they managed to get most of the big names in there that have signatures in there. So you're looking at Kazuchika Okada, Kenny Omega, Tomohiro Ishii, Tanahashi, all those guys. So chasing those down has been kind of a fun challenge. I'm also a big fan of independent wrestling cards. There's been a couple of Pro Wrestling Guerrilla has a fan has done some fan cards for those the last couple of years. And we go back and look at the 2016 set. It's pretty crazy because everybody in there now is either a top star in WWE or New Japan or ROH, or is a real, is a prospect with a lot of buzz around them. Pete Dunne, Kamatachi, which is Hiromu Takahashi, and some other people like that. Probably the easiest way to get started, it depends on what you like. Do you like action figures? Do you like trading cards? You know, you can walk into any Walmart or Target or any other store and find Topps WWE trading cards and action figures and things like that. And the best bet is if people want to assess value. I know for years and years, like I mentioned, Beckett was kind of the go-to guide for values. My opinion, that's kind of outdated. If you're kind of trying to find the price of what you should be paying for something, go to eBay and get an idea for what something's selling for there, because things can fluctuate so much.
And speaking of Beckett, now we come to the million-dollar question, Michael. Could be quite literally the million-dollar question here that I sort of teased on Twitter the other day. I started collecting baseball and, to a lesser extent, football cards when I was a kid, and I couldn't wait to get a few dollars in my pocket so I could run down a couple blocks to the CVS on the corner and see what they had for baseball cards and buy a pack here and there. And, you know, I loved going. My parents would drag me along to these flea markets, and the one saving grace would there's always be somebody selling cards there. And so I could take some solace in that when they dragged me along on Saturday mornings and things like that. I probably at my parents' house in New York right now, I have an average of 400 cards per team of Major League Baseball. Now, obviously, the Rockies, Marlins, Diamondbacks, Rays, I have less because they've been around for a shorter amount of time. Most of my cards being in the 90s. When I was a kid and I was buying these cards pack by pack, I would always say, this is going to pay off my college one day. This is going to pay off all my loans. I'm going to sell these cards. And all of a sudden, you know, by the mid to late 90s, the trading card business just kind of took a downturn. And it seemed like in the 90s, the market was just flooded with so many cards, they lost their value. So, Michael, I've got thousands upon thousands of baseball cards sitting under my bed at home. How much can I sell these suckers for? Because they're not doing me any good right now.
How much change do you have in your couch right now? That's probably, sadly, anything produced from about 1985 to about 1990, I don't know, four or five, let's pick there, was so overprinted. And so overproduced that the majority of it is just, to say it's worthless would be an overstatement. I mean, it's an understatement. It's just beyond overproduced. The saving grace to that is the people who collected during that time are getting nostalgic for that time. Now they've kind of grown up, they've had kids, or they've started careers, whatever. Now they want to go back and get what they had as a kid, that you always hear the story of my mom threw out my baseball cards. So there is more of a market, I would say, right now in sports cards from the 90s, because there's a lot more done then. You had a lot more companies in business. You had Upper Deck and Topps, and those two are still around today. Panini, which took over all of the Donruss brands. You had Fleer. You had all those companies. So you had so many card companies out there making cards. But there was some cool stuff done then. Fleer did some really cool stuff. And the Pinnacle brands, which at the time was Donruss and Score, and those did some pretty cool things. So, you know, it just kind of depends on what you have. but people who bought a set of 1987 Topps baseball cards, like my parents did, thinking that it was going to pay for their kids' futures, it didn't exactly go out that way.
Well, I'm glad I'm not the only one who is thinking that anyway. So you've given me a sliver of hope, which is all that I can ask for in this climate of trading cards. So if you're just tuning in, PW Torch, yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you know, if you've got there's teams out there that have the most loyal fans in the world, you know, the Yankees and the Packers and things like that, and in general, that stuff from that era is not worth a lot. But you know, you'd be surprised. You see stuff of Brett Favre or Mariano Rivera or Ken Griffey, especially, still every now and then something will really surprise you and really fetch some good money.
Well, I guess I have to do some more scouring on eBay to see what I can get for some of these. I'll have to somehow figure out a way to transport these boxes upon boxes down here to Florida where I can get a hold of them. And maybe that'll be my summer project this summer is doing just that. PWTorch.com writer Michael Moore, he covers collectible scene. He is here with us on Wrestling Night in America, and we thank you for being with us as well. We'll get to your phone calls right after this break. Here on PWTorchLivecast.com.
PWTorch Livecast listeners, I'm Wade Keller, and I urge you to be sure that you're also subscribing to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast at Podcast One and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. All you have to do is search Wade Keller in Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast app you use on your Apple or Android device to subscribe to both feeds. There's a red brand covering Raw and SmackDown every Monday night and Tuesday night, and it's downloadable a couple hours after the show. And then there's also the Wade Keller Podcast Flagship Edition on Thursdays with a rotation of co-hosts, including Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net, Todd Martin, Bruce Mitchell, and others. And then there's our Interview Friday edition. Every Friday, I'm joined by a guest who has worked in the wrestling business, including ex-WWE creative team members like Kevin Eck talking about Drew McIntyre.
Drew was a young guy, and did it go to his head, and did he walk around like he was the chosen one? He did, and I was frank with him, and I said, Drew, just so you know, this is how they view you.
And Podcast One's own Christian Harloff talking about his days working for WWE and Vince McMahon specifically.
As far as their perception of him, I mean, he's the king. He walks in, and it's just, you can feel it. I mean, if the force was real, you would feel the force powering into the room when he enters.
And pro wrestlers, including NWA World Heavyweight Champion Nick Aldis, also known as Magnus, talking about the challenges facing Ronda Rousey as she transitions from MMA to WWE.
Think about like the press conferences and stuff like that. They just, someone tells them like, all right, now it's your turn, go out there, right? I'm sure if you ask Ronda, she'd probably say this moment is the result of hundreds of people's work, meticulous preparation and planning and timing and everything. And now suddenly it's like, go. And that can be very overwhelming.
Just search Wade Keller on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen to podcasts.
You know, it is spring break for me, and I have grown out this massive beard over this week. But guess what? I go back to school tomorrow. And if this was the old me, I would be dreading having to shave this beard off with my electric razor and get the razor burn, and it's a mess. But with Harry's, I don't have to worry about any of that, because Harry's is all about a great shave at a fair price, which is why over 3 million guys have switched to Harry's. Jeff and Andy, two ordinary guys who are fed up with getting charged arm and a leg for razor blades, started Harry's to fix shaving. A good shave comes down to good blades. Because Harry's owns the factory, they're able to deliver amazing quality blades for just $2 a blade compared to the $4 or more you'll pay at the drugstore, and all products are backed by a 100. Harry's is so confident you're going to love their blades, they'll give you their trial shave set for free when you sign up at harrys.com/PWTorch. Just pay for shipping. Claim your free trial offer from Harry's today, a $13 value for free. When you sign up, just cover shipping. Your free trial set includes a weighted ergonomic razor handle, 5 precision-engineered blades with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich leather shave gel, a travel blade cover. To get your free trial set, go to harrys.com/PWTorch right now. That's harrys.com/PWTorch. Back here on Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchLivecast.com. I'm here with Michael Moore, PWTorch.com collectibles writer. And we're going to go to your phone calls right now. We're talking about the big events in professional wrestling, whether that's on Raw, SmackDown, NXT, Impact, the indie scene, or, of course, that big show coming up. What's it called? WrestleMania. That's the one. So our first call tonight will be from, it looks like, a Skype phone call. Please state your name and where you're calling from. Hello, you're on the air. Ooh, that sounds like a call from another dimension. We'll put that person back on hold and try again a little later on. Instead, we'll go to the 516 area code with, I believe this is Frank. Frank, are you with us?
You believe correctly, Greg. How are you doing tonight, my friend?
I'm doing well, Frank. Thanks for calling, as always.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate that. Mike, how you doing as well tonight?
It's good, Frank. Thanks for calling.
Absolutely, absolutely. You guys are getting me thinking about going down in the basement and getting my baseball cards. I got quite a few boxes myself. And as far as collectibles, I think, I'm not sure, my mother in the attic has my old wrestling dolls from, you remember those things from the 80s when they came out? I think it might have been like 85 or 86. You remember what I'm talking about, right?
The big rubber ones or the plush ones or...
The big rubber ones. I think that when they first came out, I think they had Hogan. I think they had Sheik and Volkoff and Piper and Andre and, you know, all of those guys.
Yeah, absolutely. The LJN figures, that's what I got started on and still have quite a few of them. And a lot of nostalgia for those right now.
Oh, man, unbelievable. I wonder, you know, like every once in a while I look up some of the old toys. I ought to look up on like eBay or something or Amazon to see if you can still get them. But when I saw you were going to be on the air, it got me thinking about those things. So, but anyway, I want to do a little nostalgia topic before I go into current events. I know we got a lot of stuff going on this week, but Wade and Sam's Interview Friday podcast got me thinking about the old WrestleManias, you know, when they were reviewing 1 through 17. And I know that Shawn Michaels is pretty much regarded as Mr. WrestleMania, but I think we can make the argument that the Macho Man was the original Mr. WrestleMania. I mean, you look at the first nine, Savage and Steamboat, WrestleMania 3, the tournament when he won the title in 4, the retirement match with Warrior in 7, and even the title match with Flair in 8. Those matches kept you on the edge of your seat. And I would, it's fair to say that Steamboat Savage was the first match that really kept you on the edge of your seat for the entire match. So what do you guys think about that?
Yeah, Savage, certainly, I think, you know, as time went on, his role in WWE lessened. And so I think that's part of why he isn't seen as the same Mr. WrestleMania that Shawn Michaels is. But certainly, I mean, he got one of the few really good matches out of the Ultimate Warrior there at WrestleMania. Savage Steamboat is still regarded as a classic in WrestleMania lore, Michael. I mean, you know, there's certainly a case to be made that Savage, if not Mr. WrestleMania, maybe the original Mr. WrestleMania before Shawn Michaels came along and sort of took that mantle.
Yeah, I think so. And I think the thing that you need to think about with that too is, you know, at the time that Savage was having those matches, there was not a lot of great wrestling on those WrestleMania shows. You go back and look at WrestleMania 2, and his match on there with George Steele was not particularly great. But go back and look at WrestleMania 3, like you mentioned. Yeah, there were some real duds on that. Harley Race and Junkyard Dog and Hercules and Billy Jack Haynes, one of my friends, still refers to as the worst match he's ever seen. That Savage match... Savage Steamboat, phenomenal. All of Savage's matches with a variety of opponents at 4 was incredible. People sleep on that Warrior match at WrestleMania 7. To me, that's still, of those early WrestleMania years, that's still one of the best matches I've seen was with Savage and Warrior. I mean, it's just really, really good. You know, Shawn Michaels stood out at a time, especially his second run, where there was a lot more good wrestling on the cards. Those early WrestleManias, in a lot of ways, I think Savage was carrying the quality of those shows, maybe not necessarily selling the tickets that Hogan and Andre and people were doing. But, I mean, he was having the best match year in and year out.
And I want to go back to that Savage Flair match that Frank mentioned, and that was the whole Elizabeth, she was mine before she was yours storyline. And Savage really had a lot of good storylines around WrestleMania time, which made it, I think, easier to have good matches when you can tell a story in the ring. And you know, I don't know what the reaction to the Savage Flair storyline was back then, because I was still a young wrestling fan. I didn't subscribe to any newsletter. I, you know, wasn't pulling PWIs off quite yet. I was still pretty young. But a couple of years ago, I went back through the wormhole on YouTube, and I watched a lot, or maybe all, the vignettes leading up to Savage Flair at WrestleMania. And for that time period, I mean, those things were really amazing. And I remember, even at the time, as a kid, really liking that storyline. And I think I may even have liked it better as an adult, getting to appreciate it a little more watching it a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I thought the storyline was phenomenal myself. And I really liked Savage's promo after the match, when he's in the back just, you know, looking like his eyes are about to pop out of his head because Flair had made another move towards Elizabeth, and he's hobbled on that one knee, but he's just cutting that promo on Flair. That I thought that was a great storyline myself.
I don't think his eyes looked like they were going to pop out of his head. I think they were probably going to pop out of his head, knowing Savage. But back to Frank.
Yeah, Savage with his eyes popping out of his head. What a shock. I mean, you can make the case that almost all of his promos were that way, but, you know, a couple of things before I close that topic. You could make the case that Savage Flair storyline was kind of one of the first of the, I don't know, compelling storylines that kind of involved like a love triangle. Like, I know they had the one with Steel Savage and Elizabeth, but that was different. I can't remember a storyline that was as compelling before Flair Savage. And the other thing I think about all the time, I really wonder if the roster split was around then. I wonder what kind of success Savage would have had, because I think if there was a case where there was like a Raw and there was a SmackDown, Hogan probably would have been the main attraction on Raw. Savage would have been the main attraction on SmackDown as the lead babyface.
Yeah, but I wonder if being on that second brand would have kind of brought down Savage's worth. You know, certainly sharing time with Hogan on the main brand, he was at times the clear number two when he was a babyface. But, you know, being able to interact with Hogan, and he had some great interactions with Hogan, too. So, you know, I thought Savage brought something different than Hogan did. So even though he was maybe under Hogan in the pecking order, I thought he brought something different. I just worry about, you know, you look at even today when guys are put on SmackDown, AJ Styles, Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, they're at the top of SmackDown now. They are seen as probably not as big a stars as some of the guys on top on Raw. Michael, how do you think that would have worked back in the day if Savage had led one brand and Hogan had led the other?
I think he kind of did at one point when, not so much on TV, but when you look at the house show business in about 1986, you know, you had Savage work in those B-towns as the Intercontinental Champion, and night after night putting on better matches than Hogan, but not having the star power at that point. You know, he wasn't positioned to at that point, but I think you're absolutely right. I mean, as long as SmackDown is the B-show, as long as Vince McMahon is in charge, it always will be. I think that top guy is going to suffer. Those top guys, I think Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn are so lost right now because of this awful program with Shane McMahon. They could really use something to jumpstart that whole thing.
Oh, no kidding. No kidding. I tell you, the Shane, Sami Kevin thing is really something else, but, I want to shift back into, in the current events with the whole Roman Lesnar thing. And I don't know if I really have a point in what I'm going to say, but I'll just throw everything at you guys and see what, you know, what you think. I don't really like the psychology of what they're doing. It doesn't make sense to me. I don't buy the fact that Roman is being screwed by Vince. In fact, I believe the opposite. Okay. I believe that, and we all believe, I think, that he's being favored by Vince with this push. The whole thing of, you know, Vince has got, and Greg, I know you and Wade talked about it on the flagship. I listened to it. The whole Vince's guy thing was a joke. Forget about Shane being backstage. That's another, you know, laugh out loud moment. But I just don't like the psychology of what they're doing. I feel like the opposite is going on. You know, you can't frame Roman as Stone Cold the way Stone Cold was back in the day. Back in the day, Stone Cold was beloved by the fans. So when he was being arrested or suspended, you know, the cops were coming or whatever by Vince, you know, we were all pissed at Vince because he was suspending or having our guy arrested. Well, Roman is not the fan's guy. So I just don't think the psychology of the whole situation makes sense. You know, and had WWE framed Reigns in the right light, you know, not necessarily as a heel, but as a baby face that we all liked, and had that characteristic that we, you know, latched onto, they wouldn't be in this predicament where they'd have to force feed him and try, you know, every trick in the book to get him over as a baby face. So with that mishmash of comments, what do you guys think?
You know, Frank, one of the things I take from what you just said is, yeah, Austin got over because the fans were on his side, but he also got over because what they were doing was so different. The storylines and the angles they did with him had never been really seen before on a national level, or maybe at all. And I think that's mm-hmm. what helped him get over. You're not seeing them try to break Reigns out of this corporate sanitized WWE presentation. He's still playing within the bounds of what WWE does, and he's not doing anything different. Yes, going through the curtain and showing the gorilla position, you know, that's a little different. They try not to show that very often, at least in full view like we got on Monday night. But there's nothing that's landscape-changing as what they did with Austin. There's nothing here that says WWE is trying to think outside the box to get Roman Reigns over mm-hmm. the way they did with Steve Austin. And I think mm-hmm. that's part of the problem here. Michael, what's your take on the whole Reigns-Lesnar situation, given what we saw last week?
Yeah, I agree. And I think the biggest flaw in it is that the people that they're trying to speak to with this whole Vince's boy type thing are the exact people who are not going to buy into it to begin with. Mm-hmm. I, for several years now, have thought Roman is a complete lost cause, because not because of him, but just because of how he's been handled. And the one thing I've taken away from this, which I think I'm maybe in the minority, because I'm pretty down on WWE's current product, but Reigns' delivery to me has been really good. The material he's been given has been awful. But his delivery, he finally, for the first time, feels like he's speaking. It doesn't feel like he's Vince's puppet, and which obviously he is, but he's finally mm-hmm. delivering it. It makes me wonder, had they gotten out of his way 4 years ago and just let him find himself, you just kind of cringe when you think, had they scripted this garbage for Steve Austin, would he have ever gotten over to this extent? And I don't think he would have. As Austin is a once-in-a-lifetime talent, is, to me, the biggest star the business has ever seen. But I think if you had put all these roadblocks in his way that WWE does to their wrestlers right now, I don't know that he ever would have gotten over.
Yeah, and the one thing with Reigns, too, and it's not just Reigns, it's a lot of the other guys on the roster. You look at what they post on social media and on Twitter and promos that they've been cutting to hype their storylines and their feuds. It's been really good. But then you put them again, and I go back to this phrase, that corporate sanitized environment of WWE where we're going to script out every word of your promo for you, and they all feel like robots. And it's as Michael said, it's the same thing with Roman Reigns. You give this guy a platform, you give him some authenticity to him, and I'm sure he's going to come across pretty well. Now, whether you want him to be a heel or a babyface, but when you script guys as tightly as WWE does, it obviously takes away some of the natural talking ability and the ability of these guys to get their character across to the fans. And I think that's where a lot of the struggle is with Reigns. And he sort of broke out of it a couple of weeks ago when he first put down Brock Lesnar, said Brock isn't here, you know, and he went off on his tangent there on Raw. But, you know, we've got a few weeks. Brock Lesnar has promised to be on Raw this week. We'll see where they go with that. We're going to come back to Frank and Michael right after this break. You're listening to Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchLivecast.com.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
back here on Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchLivecast.com. We've got Frank on the line. I'm joined by Michael Moore, PWTorch.com collectibles writer. And Frank, did you have any follow-up to our discussion about Roman Reigns or a third point you wanted to make tonight?
You guys nailed it right on the head. Also, my wife, Erin, nodded approval, so just say hello real quick.
Hi.
Hey, Erin.
Hi.
Hello.
No, she totally, both of us totally agree. I've long advocated, let these guys, and Greg, we'll save this for another night, but let these characters be an extension of the real person. Let Roman Reigns be an extension of Joe Anoa'i. You know, have your bullet points, talk about what you want to talk about, but speak a little more freely the way he did a couple of weeks ago, the way CM Punk did in 2011, wink, wink, the night of the pipe bomb promo. Anyway, third topic, Cena Undertaker. What would you guys want to see Undertaker come out as? Because for me, you know, if this is going to be his last match, and year to year, you never know what's going to happen. But for me, Kid Rock's getting inducted. When John Cena came up, he was actually Big Evil when Cena came up in 2002. But maybe he was, in OVW before that, whatever. I don't know. But I mean, to me, if this is possibly Undertaker's last match, as much as I like American Badass, I'd rather see the Dead Man. What do you guys think?
Yeah, that's something that was brought up on as Frank mentioned earlier. I was on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast on Podcast One, and that's a question he broached to me. Is and he kind of laid it out there, and when he laid it out, it made sense. The Undertaker coming back this year as the American Badass, facing John Cena. So it's not Deadman versus John Cena. It's the old Attitude Era character of The Undertaker against John Cena. And that is an idea that I see picking up more and more steam on social media as the days go by. The possibility and the anticipation of American Badass Taker against John Cena. And Wade posted that question on his Twitter account and 43%, I think, of people wanted to see the American Badass come back. And I don't know. I think it's a really creative idea. It speaks to me as someone who's lived through the Attitude Era, but is it going to speak to the general population of the WWE audience who are maybe recent fans and didn't live through that? I mean, Michael, what's your personal preference on which Undertaker we get, and what do you think would be best for WWE?
I don't want to see it at all. I mean, these last couple of WrestleManias have been really, really rough watching Undertaker out there. He just has not looked good. You just hate to see somebody of that stature go out like that. But I think there's some real intrigue in the American Badass character. I've kind of always thought with Undertaker that when he hits that last match, whatever that is, he's kind of had this look for a couple of years, but this Clint Eastwood in Gran Torino, just this tough, mean old man, out there for one last fight. And I don't know which way, it maybe would be a good way for him to do that as his character. Maybe if, there's still a lot of talk to people about him leaving his gear in the ring last year, maybe is that him leaving the Dead Man behind? Is that him retiring? Whatever. I don't know. It's one of those things that's kind of up in the air. I will say that as much as I don't want to see the match, the American Badass does kind of pique my interest a little bit, because it's something that'll be very different from what we've seen these last couple of years with these just awful matches, in my opinion, with Undertaker and Reigns, and Undertaker and Bray Wyatt, and Undertaker and Shane McMahon, which the less said about that, the better. I don't know. It's hard for me to say. I'd kind of like to see the American Badass thing myself.
I guess the one thing I will say about that is every year seems to be the possibility that it's going to be The Undertaker's last match. And given the character of The Undertaker, the Dead Man, and what that's meant to Mark Calloway's career, is he okay with the possibility of having his very last match be as not the Dead Man, but as the American Badass character. You know, if something happens in this match with John Cena and he's playing the American Badass character and he can't come back again, and that was truly his last match this year, it would almost seem a little strange for his last match to be in this character that he played for such a very short time rather than the iconic Deadman character that he made such a success. So that would be a little odd to not have him end his career on the Deadman note.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right about that.
Frank, anything else from you tonight?
What I'll say, well, I wanted to talk to you about the switching the women around on the roster, Greg, but I'll save that for next week. I just want to stay with this. The reason I say we should see the Deadman is we haven't seen Cena versus Undertaker. I know they wrestled earlier in Cena's career when he was, what was it, the Thugonomics gimmick. I know they wrestled then, but they never wrestled since Cena has been, you know, the champ. And, you know, we didn't get Undertaker Sting, which we wanted. I believe Cena Undertaker was canceled like 3 times or 4 times, whatever it was. The year he wrestled Michaels, I think a year that Undertaker wrestled Triple H, whatever it was. The bottom line is you have these two, you know, iconic figures that were in the company together for how many years. And if they are going to square off, I would rather them square off with the Undertaker exhibiting his best gimmick. I mean, I'll be honest, I'm going to cheer American Badass if he's there because I did like the gimmick. So either way, it doesn't matter. I'm just saying for the sake of, you know, the two guys, we should see the gimmick that suited the Undertaker the best. And what suited him the best was the Deadman, in my opinion.
I think that's a really good point, Frank.
And I go back and forth on this, guys. You know, Frank makes a good point there with the Deadman. You know, the intrigue of seeing Mark Calloway back as the American Badass, that's intriguing on a certain level and may fit this storyline as it's being laid out. So this is one I go back and forth on. I don't think there's a wrong answer. I'll just put it that way. I think both have their intriguing possibilities.
I got something working on me. I totally agree.
All right. Well, Frank, we appreciate the phone call. As always, you take care for another week, and we'll talk to you again in 7 days.
Absolutely, Greg. And, Mike, nice talking to you. Hopefully the Broncos serve you well this year, and hopefully the Giants serve me well. We can have a little Super Bowl. How about that, huh?
It didn't go too well for me last time that happened, but, yeah, we can go for that.
Last year didn't go too well for either one of us, so hopefully we get a better
pick. Not at all. Yeah, you have a good
you guys
week,
have
Mike. Thanks for calling in.
Absolutely, Mike. Have a good night, brother.
Take care, Frank.
Good night, Greg. Have a good one.
So before we get on to other phone calls, Michael, I want to talk a little bit about SmackDown. Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn ended the show last week attacking Shane McMahon after he vowed to take a leave of absence. What will Daniel Bryan's reaction be this Tuesday night on SmackDown? We'll have to find out. There's also a new interview that Daniel Bryan did overseas that's gotten some traction this week with him sounding maybe a little more positive on the possibility of him wrestling again with WWE, perhaps at WrestleMania. So there's that to look forward to as we count down the weeks. You know, we're coming to the point where something's got to give here. If he is going to wrestle again at WrestleMania, that, you know, announcement would have to be made probably this Tuesday on SmackDown. We also had on social media this week, Rusev demanding a celebrity opponent for WrestleMania. I don't know how serious that is, but WWE.com did pick it up and post it there, so there may be something to this, more than just Rusev kind of going out on his own on social media and doing this. And AJ Styles, there was an injury or a storyline injury at a house show at Madison Square Garden this week. He did not wrestle Saturday night in Odessa, so there is some question as to whether or not that is an angle for the house shows, or if he does have some sort of injury that's kept him out of action. So, Michael, this Owens, Sami Zayn, Shane McMahon storyline that we saw draw out on Tuesday night, Do you have any sense for what's going to happen before Shane was attacked? He made Sami Zayn versus Kevin Owens for WrestleMania. Do you get a sense that Daniel Bryan is going to change that at all when he returns this Tuesday?
I thought it was kind of odd how little they brought up Daniel Bryan's name when that segment was going on, or throughout that whole show, really. It kind of made me wonder what was going on there. Yeah, I don't really have much of a feeling of where they're going with that. If it's a, it doesn't make much sense to me to make it a triple threat match. Because you have two guys who, you know, despite their bickering the last couple of weeks, are kind of on the same side. Kind of reminds me of what they did with Randy Orton and the Legacy guys, where they made that a triple threat match for really no reason. There was no reason for Cody and Ted DiBiase to be opposing each other, but what else do you do? Do you have Daniel Bryan, if he wrestles, which would just completely baffle me if he were to wrestle again in the WWE ring, but do you make a tag team match and have him come to the aid of Shane McMahon against those two? Does he referee some sort of triple threat? I honestly can't figure out where they're going with this thing.
It would be so strange to me if Daniel Bryan does get cleared to wrestle by WWE and he ends up tagging with Shane against Owens and Zayn, given the way this storyline has played out thus far, which is Shane and Daniel Bryan being at odds. You know, that's been the story, and for them to kind of get together, unless Daniel Bryan puts his foot down on Tuesday and say, you know, Zayn and Owens, you guys crossed the line by attacking Shane the way you did. I'm going to put aside my differences with Shane and team with him at WrestleMania against you guys, and then there can be a question leading up to Mania about, you know, is Daniel Bryan really a mole still on the side of Owens and Zayn? Is he going to double-cross Shane McMahon in that tag match? So that's a direction they could go. But I'm with you, Michael. I've long held the belief that Daniel Bryan is not going to wrestle in WWE again. They're not going to clear him no matter how many doctor's notes he has. I just think that the risk there and the precedent you're setting if you're WWE and allowing Bryan to compete after they've held him out for so long is a dangerous precedent to set if you're WWE. Now, that's not to say that I wouldn't be interested in seeing Bryan back in the ring. You know, I don't know what kind of style he'll wrestle if he does get back in the ring. Presumably, he will wrestle somewhat of a different style than he did before. But, you know, there's always going to be in the back of your mind watching him wrestle. He's one concussion, one injury away. I mean, everybody really is, but him more so than anyone else. One bad landing on his head away from that's it, you're done. Because if something happens to him again, you know, there's no question, you know, after WWE, you know, if he was to wrestle again and then get hurt, there's no way he would get cleared again after that, I don't think.
No, and the thing to me that just from a business perspective, that I don't see how WWE could clear him to wrestle, given that their doctor and their wellness policy is what said in the first place he's done. That's a bad, really, really bad look to me if they go back on that, because what are you saying at that point? Well, something changed, you know, two, 3 years ago, whatever it was, our doctor said he couldn't wrestle, but now we're going to let him in. It almost feels like they would be clearing him for storyline purposes. And I just think corporately, that's a really bad move, and I don't think that the risk of it would be worth the reward for them.
Yeah, that would be a tough one. You know, understanding Daniel's position where he's getting cleared by so many doctors and he just has that, you know, that's his life's work. That's he ties who he is into being a professional wrestler, and for him to not be able to do this is crushing to him, I think. And so I see it on both sides, and this is not an easy decision for WWE, and I'm glad I'm not the one having to make this decision, because it would be very, very difficult. Hold on, listeners. We will be back with more of your phone calls. We'll be back with more talk leading up to WrestleMania. We'll talk Raw. We'll talk WrestleMania lineup. We'll talk more. Coming up after this break, you're listening to Wrestling Night America on PWTorchLivecast.com.
When you want to know when the next episode of the PW Torch Livecast is scheduled or catch up on a show you missed, check out our homepage, pwtorchlivecast.com. You can stream the latest shows right from that page, or download the show, or get a link to subscribe on a podcast app. That's pwtorchlivecast.com for the latest shows, and also catch up on shows you missed at pwtorchlivecast.com.
back here on Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchLivecast.com. I'm here with Michael Moore, first-time livecast co-host here on Wrestling Night in America. He is the PWTorch.com writer of all things collectible in the professional wrestling world. We're going to try once again the I believe this is a Skype call. It's coming up as 111 on my little bank here, so we'll go to that. Skype, are you there? I will say that's a very soothing background noise. It's almost like the ocean.
You think? It kind of reminded me of Ole Anderson and the Black Scorpion myself.
Well, that's certainly a very different sense that from this. But it looks like we're not being able to pick anything up from that. So we will move on and go to the 814 area code. 814, you're on Wrestling Night in America. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
This is Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland.
Ryan, good to talk to you again. What do you have from Michael and I here on Wrestling Night in America?
Yeah, the first question up for you is a trading card question about the WCW cards that came out in 1991. Uh-huh. Is there a reason why KB Toys was selling this for $3 a box back in the day? Was it because that they mass-produced them, or was this because nobody was buying these things?
It was a little bit of both. There was actually two different products that came out that year. One was from, Impel, and I want to say the other one was from Championship Marketing. I might be wrong about that. There were two sets. There was one that was black with a gold border, and then there was another one that was like neon-colored that was kind of yellow with some designs, very early 90-ish looking, which both are really, really popular today. They don't hold much value, but I think people have a lot of nostalgia for them. But yeah, it's a little bit of both. They were really massively overproduced, and they just didn't sell. I honestly don't ever even remember seeing them when they were originally released. It's just all of a sudden I saw the same thing as you. All of a sudden they popped up for an entire box of cards for $3 at KB Toys or Big Lots or Pick and Save or wherever they were showing up.
My second question for you is, tracking into a pretty big independent show last night with James Ellsworth and Honky Tonk Man, and all the wrestlers showed up. They had to like stall for 2 hours and finally had to cancel the show because of no doctor showing up. Is this a pretty common occurrence in indie wrestling that they cancel shows like after 2 hours after it's supposed to start and keep the fans waiting that long?
I don't think so. It's a new one to me. I'm sure it has happened, and I'm sure a lot of it depends on, you know, the promoter and the wrestling commission in that state as far as what is necessary to run a show. And if they need what kind of medical personnel is needed at the show based on the commission. So that's the kind of thing that could vary from state to state. I did a three-part series about wrestling commissions. Gosh, this was probably 10 years ago. And I'm dating myself a little bit here, probably closer to 7 or 8 years ago, maybe in the, and my column in the Torch newsletter, which you can still, even today, find my column in the Torch newsletter on page 10 every week. I did a column, a three-part series, looking at the wrestling commissions in every state and what kind of – a lot of them, they had arcane rules that, you know, probably they forced on indie shows. But I'm sure if WWE went there, they were able to massage those rules a little more. But it was a really interesting look, and you can find it in the archives on pwtorch.com. If you're a VIP member, check out my column from several years ago about those commissions. But to circle back to your question, Ryan, I think that is kind of a unique situation that happened this weekend.
Okay. And another question I got for you. I got to meet Brian Pillman Jr. last night at that show. Do you see a future for him in pro wrestling or familiar with his work since I didn't get to see him wrestle last night?
Well, Ryan, you're just running me into all kinds of plugs. A couple weeks ago in my column, I reviewed somewhat of a biography on Brian Pillman, and it I think it just won Best book in the Wrestling Observer Awards too. The Brian Pillman, Crazy Like a Fox is the title. If you haven't read it, I highly recommend it. Liam O'Rourke wrote it. It was a great read about Brian Pillman. And, you know, we've all heard about the work shoot in WCW and all the kind of crazy stuff he got himself into. But a lot of the stuff we heard was just very surface level. We heard that it happened. We didn't really hear all the stories behind why it happened. And if you're interested in that and interested in reading, just about a plain old interesting guy is what Brian Pillman was. I highly recommend checking out that book and check out my review from a few weeks ago in the Torch newsletter. But, you know, Brian Pillman Jr., you know, I think he's relatively new to the pro wrestling scene. If he's anywhere near as talented as his dad, I think he'll make it. You know, he's got the name value. He's already making a name for himself on the independent scene. As young as he is. So I see a future for him, and he seems to have a good head on his shoulders from everything I've read about him so far. So I'm really looking forward to seeing sort of where he goes on the indie scene. Michael, any thoughts on Brian Pillman or Brian Pillman Jr.?
Yeah, I haven't seen a lot of him either. I've interacted with him on Twitter a few times, follow him, and he seems like a nice enough guy. He seems like you said, he's got a good head on his shoulders. I've seen some clips. He's got a good look, and he certainly seems to have that athleticism that his dad had. Yeah, Brian was certainly a fascinating character in wrestling, and have not picked up that book yet, but that's definitely on my must-read list.
Anything else for us today, Ryan?
My final question, you were talking about wrestling books. Is there a reason why some of these books, such as the Gary Hart book or so, outrageously priced on Amazon?
The Gary Hart book I know is out of print. And you'll every once in a while, if you follow Court Bauer on Twitter, and he's the guy that Gary Hart really took under his wing and taught him you know, the ins and outs of booking, and Court and Gary were very close. Court now runs Major League Wrestling out of Florida. People will ask him every once in a while about the possibility of getting the book reprinted, and it's just a matter of, you know, the publisher's not interested in printing more copies of the book. I was lucky to get a copy before the prices went through the roof. But yeah, that's another fantastic book, the Gary Hart book, and it's unfortunate that it's not easier to find because it is such a good read. Michael, I kind of want to ask you, going along the same lines, is, have you seen any books, any wrestler autobiographies or any books about wrestlers that have become sort of this white whale that this Gary Hart book has become?
No, just the Gary Hart book. And I did a column, I'll take that back in just a second, but I did a column a few years back on this topic and talked with Court, and the timing on it was pretty good because Court, right when I first contacted him, was trying to work with the family and work with the publisher about getting a second printing of this done or having it posted to Amazon, you know, having it digitally available, something. He was really hoping to get that done, and he kind of definitively said at that point, it's just not going to happen. Which is a real bummer. I met Gary Hart once and was just a great, was an old World Class fan, and I lived in Houston for about 5 years. And I had a chance to meet him and Akbar and some of the other guys, and he was just a great guy. One of the other books that is kind of in that same vein, it's not to the extent of it, but Jim Cornette's book that he put out a few years ago, the Midnight Express 25th anniversary scrapbook, also was out of print. And there were a few that surfaced that Cornette himself sold on his website a couple months ago, and just, to be cliche, almost broke the internet because of people trying to get a hold of it. But that's another one that the prices are not nearly as insane as Gary Hart's book, but very hard to get. And I've seen bidding wars where it's driven it up for $200 or a couple hundred bucks.
So maybe I don't sell my baseball card collection. Maybe I sell my Gary Hart book, and that makes me as much as my baseball cards would make me if I took them all together. How about that?
I would bet it would, and it would be a lot easier to ship, and it would be a lot easier to list, and you wouldn't have nearly as much to go through, and I would bet that one item would carry probably a lot more value.
Yeah, that's something to think about. All right, Ryan, thanks for calling again tonight, and I hope to hear from you again soon.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call, and I believe J.J. Dillon's book has been a little bit overpriced, too, to answer your question that you had asked.
Yeah.
Does Jimmy have some doubles on his website? I thought he did.
I don't know, but that's another one that I have. And it's funny because I don't know if it's the end or somewhere in the book, he like gives his email address. He's like, hey, you know, if you're interested, email me. And I was like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to email J.J. Dillon. So I went and emailed him at the email address and, you know, just gave some thoughts on the book and some memories I had. And he actually emailed me back, and it was really cool. So if you do have J.J.'s book, and I don't know if he still uses that email or not, but that was I keep saying it, but that was another really, really good book. J.J. Dillon's there. I mean, he's a guy who's seen it all, done it all in the professional wrestling industry. And last week in the Torch newsletter, I reviewed JR's book that I just finished. So that's another one. And part one, I think, of another part will be coming from Jim Ross here soon. But, interesting talk about books. I mean, Michael, anything else? We talked about Gary Hart's being a rare book. Are there any other books that you've run into? Maybe any older books that you've seen that are worth something out there? If anyone listening at home has them?
Yeah, I know some of the older ones. I know Fall Guys getting a first printing of that. I really don't know what the price would be on that, but I know that's a really tough one to come by. And same with, what's the name of the Luthez book? Is that Hooker? Is that the name of that one? I think it is.
Yeah.
But yeah, some of those, a lot of the WWE books that they put out in the late 90s, early 2000s really don't have a lot of value to them, which isn't surprising. A lot of those old ones really do. Like I said, especially Fall Guys, I know finding a first edition of that's really rare. I think Jim Cornette may have talked about that recently on one of his podcasts. But yeah, the Gary Hart is certainly the kind of the holy grail for wrestling book collectors, both because of its rarity and just how fascinatingly good his and J.J. Dillon's books, I think, are a lot, as far as content-wise, probably, pretty similar because you've got two guys who just did everything in the wrestling business from every aspect of it.
Absolutely. So great insight here from Michael Moore. We're going to take another break, and we'll be back after this to talk Monday Night Raw. We're going to talk WrestleMania lineup, and we'll continue taking your calls. The number is 515-605-9345 if you want to hop on the line and ask us a question or have a comment. And, of course, you can reach me on Twitter at Greg M. Parks if you can't call in. This is Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchLivecast.com.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
Back here on Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchLivecast.com, joined by PWTorch.com collectibles writer Michael Moore, talking all kinds of collectibles in the pro wrestling world, as well as what's going on in wrestling today. Monday Night Raw this past week, we saw Braun Strowman win the Tag Team Battle Royal single-handedly. He did not have a partner in that match, and the match was set to determine who would face the bar for the Raw Tag Team Championship at WrestleMania. Big question here coming out of that, Michael, is where does WWE go with this? Do they book Braun Strowman in a 2-on-1 match for the tag titles? Does Braun find a partner? And if so, who?
That's a good question. It really is kind of interesting with this year's WrestleMania that I think for the last year, most of us have known that Brock and Roman was going to be the title match. But, just a few weeks out here, there's so many. We talked about the Shane match earlier. A couple of these matches that really kind of hard to tell what's going on with them. I don't know if Braun somehow ends up teaming with Elias. I've heard that speculated, and I'm not sure where that comes from. Other than that, you kind of have the big guys, the Canes and the Big Show, and still trying to look at who would be worth that spot that doesn't have a dance partner already for WrestleMania. And I'm kind of stumped. I don't know. What do you think, Greg? Do you have any ideas on that?
Yeah, Elias is the one that comes to mind, although I don't know how that'll work given they've been feuding lately. That's a tough one. Samoa Joe is a guy, if he's eligible to come back from injury before WrestleMania and they can do something with him, that's a possibility. You know, so many guys, especially the real top guys, because of the insistence by WWE to do so many multi-man matches, there aren't a lot of people left right now on Raw without a dance partner. So, you know, there's also the possibility that Braun Strowman goes in 2-on-1 against Cesaro and Sheamus and perhaps wins the Raw Tag Team titles after WrestleMania. Michael, that would be very unconventional, but this whole Braun Strowman push has been unconventional. He's a guy who's tipping over semi-trucks. Would it be that big of a stretch to believe that he could beat the Bar in a 2-on-1 match at WrestleMania? Or would that completely delegitimize the Raw Tag Team titles if he did that?
Yeah, I don't think that does any favors to the tag division if that happens. It wouldn't surprise me. But I'm not a fan of when they do things like that. You know, they've done the co-intercontinental champion thing with was it Chris Jericho in China, and you know, TNA did the co X division thing, and they were teasing this co WWE champion thing with Kevin Owens and Sammy at one point. You know, to me, the better thing would almost be, and I don't know who you would do this with. It seems like this would have been a perfect spot for James Ellsworth, for Kurt Angle or Stephanie or whoever it is to go to him and say, no, you have to have a partner for this. And him, you know, reluctantly saying, I don't want a partner, you know, who anybody will do. And so he gets, you know, the James Ellsworth type to just drag into that spot. And even though Braun's in there doing the whole thing, but I don't know who you would do that with right now.
Yeah, I think you almost have to have someone insist that Braun take a partner. He's not going to willingly choose a partner at this point. I think it's someone who he's got to be forced into partnering with. I'm looking at the WWE Raw roster right now. Bray Wyatt, he's got the Ultimate Deletion match with Matt Hardy coming up. Seemed to me like nothing's been announced yet for WrestleMania, but it seemed to me that him and Hardy are going to have something at WrestleMania beyond what we've seen so far. And I don't think, you know, Bray does have a history with Braun, but I don't think that makes sense at this point. Same with Matt Hardy. Looking at the roster, you got Curt Hawkins. He doesn't have anything to do. Dean Ambrose is hurt. Goldust, probably not. Jason Jordan is hurt, probably going to miss WrestleMania. Although, come on, that would be, if Jason Jordan somehow was healthy enough, can you imagine Kurt Angle saying, okay, Braun Strowman, you need a partner. I'm going to give you my son, Jason Jordan. So not only does Angle get heat, although you don't want him getting heel heat because he's teaming with Ronda Rousey for WrestleMania, you know, he would get that fatherly heat of putting his son in a position that he doesn't deserve to be in, putting him in a tag title match. And then you've got Braun Strowman, like, probably hating Jason Jordan's guts. So you've got that dynamic there. I think that would be really great if he were able to go, which I, you know, everything I've read says he's going to be out for WrestleMania. So
I hadn't even thought of that. I hadn't even thought of that, but I think that's a strong idea. I mean, you've got this, you know, the smug, arrogant guy that people just don't like celebrating and jumping up and down, even though Braun's the one doing all the work. There's a lot of potential in that. And the Elias thing, like you mentioned, I don't know how they get there. Both guys could at least come out of that stronger, I think. And when you have a guy like, if you were to plug Bray Wyatt into that or something, I just don't know what you do with Bray Wyatt at this point. But yeah, having Elias and Braun be the reluctant partners who both have a lot ahead of them, I think, and you know, could both come out of this stronger in the long run would be a pretty good idea.
And remember that Sheamus and Cesaro started off as enemies and were eventually combined into a tag team, and they've made it work, and they've made it work tremendously successfully. I think it would be very poetic for their opponents, perhaps to knock them off at WrestleMania, to be Braun Strowman and Elias, two guys who were feuding, maybe unwillingly put together, but eventually made the team work just as the Bar did. So there is some mirror images going on there. Just looking at the roster, if we're to assume Matt Hardy and Bray Wyatt are doing something at WrestleMania, Elias is far and away the top guy who's not injured. who doesn't have anything for WrestleMania. So it's either Elias or maybe call somebody up from NXT, call up a Lars Sullivan or somebody like that maybe for WrestleMania, although I don't think WWE is really in the business of calling up somebody from NXT and putting them right into a key WrestleMania match. I think they like to have them earn it a little more than that. Ultimate Deletion with Bray versus Matt is going to happen this week on Raw. We have Asuka versus Alexa Bliss and Brock Lesnar returning. Those are the things that have been announced for Raw on WWE.com. Michael, expecting Nia Jax versus Alexa Bliss for the Raw Women's title at WrestleMania, although it hasn't been officially announced. How does WWE get to that point? We saw this past week on Raw, Alexa Bliss thinking she was off camera making crude comments about Nia Jax to Mickie James backstage. That sets the stage for Nia Jax to want to just completely plow over Alexa Bliss. What's the next step in this storyline, do you think? How do we get that match to be announced?
I would bet we get a pretty straight-up sort of run-in, because I don't know that we'll get a finish to that that Alexa Bliss match this week, because I don't think you really want to hurt either person in that. I think at this point it's pretty straightforward that there's an issue between them and needs to be solved. I wasn't a big fan of how it got there. I know Wade has been pretty defensive and made a good case for why, you know, having a heel say the things she said about Nia Jax is, you know, it's okay as long as she gets her comeuppance in the end. I'm not real confident that when you have a company with the bully culture that WWE seems to have, that that's necessarily going to happen. I hope it does. I just think that there's other ways they could have gotten there without going that lowbrow route with the fat shaming and that type of thing. But it's good. I mean, they've kept the two of them away other than being, you know, the partners at times. And it certainly feels like a fresh matchup compared to, you know, I think Sasha and some of those others have kind of done their thing. And so moving on to Alexa and Nia, I think is a good move. And, you know, I think I would bet we get a run in this week and we spend the next several weeks with Alexa trying to run away, maybe taking a couple cheap shots from behind and then being stared down. And ultimately Nia getting her hands on it at WrestleMania. I just kind of concerned about, at least this isn't Pinky James or Molly Holly, but still kind of uncomfortable with it.
20 minutes left in the show here. If you want to call in and talk to me and Michael, it's 515-605-9345. You can tweet me at Greg M. Parks with a question or comment. 205 Live this past week, Cedric Alexander beat Roderick Strong to advance to the Cruiserweight title tournament final round, which will take place at WrestleMania. Cedric Alexander will face the winner of Mustafa Ali versus Drew Gulak, another semifinal match, which will take place this week on 205 Live on the WWE Network following WWE SmackDown and the Mixed Match Challenge. WWE seems to be preparing for the rumored Cruiserweight tag team titles, which have been rumored to be established after WrestleMania. Hideo Itami and Akira Tozawa have been teaming the last few weeks. We had Grand Metalik and Lince Dorado as well teaming against them. Nothing's been announced on television yet, but that is perhaps the direction that they will go for that. Michael, do you kind of have any instinct about Mustafa Ali versus Drew Gulak in the semifinals this week and in which direction they go to face Cedric Alexander at WrestleMania?
Yeah, I really have not kept up with 205 Live. To me, it seems like they're kind of relaunch it like they're attempting to do. I like the tag team idea, and I like the teams they've put together. It gives kind of almost a global feeling that tournament originally had, and some of the, you go back to some of the old, kind of has that same feeling to me. Either case, I know there's kind of been a groundswell around Mustafa Ali recently. Anybody who was associated with that show, it just seems to me like putting any two of those guys in a match at WrestleMania is not a good idea. There's just, Cedric's a good wrestler. I know there's people out there who like Drew Gulak, like Mustafa Ali. To me, they really need to launch a star and a face for that division if they're serious about rebranding it. I just don't know that any of those guys are the guys to do that with. Nothing against them, but they were just such part of a bad product for, you know, the first year, however long it's been of that show. My guess would be Gulak, I guess, so that you get so you don't end up with a face-to-face matchup at Mania. But I really don't know.
Yeah, it's kind of a toss-up. I would think Gulak as well, although I won't be disappointed with either one of them. We had Neville versus Austin Aries in the pre-show at WrestleMania last year, and none of Alexander, Ali, or Gulak have the name value or the presence of Aries or Neville. So I think this match is probably destined for the pre-show at WrestleMania this year as well, especially with the card this year as it's stacking up. It's getting to be quite a stacked card, so I'm guessing this match does end up on the pre-show. Turning our attention to NXT last week, Candice LeRae crashed the contract signing between Aleister Black and Andrade Cien Almas, although Zelina Vega was there in place of Almas. That match will take place at NXT TakeOver New Orleans. We also had Sanity over Moss and Sabatelli and Street Profits over Heavy Machinery, both in Dusty Rhodes Classic Tournament matches. Speaking of Dusty Rhodes Classic, Tyler Bate is injured. That was broken this week. He is out of the Dusty Rhodes Classic. He and Trent Seven were supposed to team. William Regal on Twitter, within the last 24 hours, I believe, has given Roderick Strong an opportunity to find a partner to replace Bate and Seven. I believe that match will take place this Wednesday on NXT TV. Shia Lee made her NXT debut in Largo last night. She was a part of the Mae Young Classic over the summer, and War Machine debuted in the last week on the NXT House Show Loop as well. We're going to get more focused on WrestleMania in our next and final segment. So again, if you have any questions or comments and want to call in, 515-605-9345. Back with more here on Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchLivecast.com.
Rich Van, formerly of the Primetime Friday Livecast with Bruce Mitchell here. I want to tell you about my new show, The Deep Dive with Rich Van. On Saturdays at 6 p.m. Eastern weekly, join us as we dive into a single subject, some weeks as serious as race, gender, and stereotyping in wrestling, to as fun as which IC champs could fit into another era, and anything in between. We'll have guests from inside and outside the Torch family to cover the subject of the week, and of course your calls and emails. Prior to each episode, I'll put out on social media the subject and some notes, places where you can also bone up on the subject of the week if you're so inclined. I'll also devote shows to two of my favorite international promotions, New Japan Pro Wrestling and Progress. All are welcome. No secret handshakes here because Saturday nights on the livecast are officially all right for diving.
Wrestling Night in America returns here on PWTorchLivecast.com. I'm Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, joined by PWTorch.com collectibles writer Michael Moore. And Michael, we turn our attention now to the WrestleMania lineup. And here is where we stand 3 weeks out. We have 10 matches announced. Brock Lesnar against Roman Reigns for the WWE Universal Championship. AJ Styles against Shinsuke Nakamura for the WWE Championship. In a triple threat match for the IC title, The Miz, Seth Rollins, and Finn Balor. We have Randy Orton, the new United States Champion, taking on Bobby Roode, although we suspect Jinder Mahal finds his way into that match. Charlotte Flair versus Asuka for the SmackDown Women's Championship. So far, Cesaro and Sheamus against Braun Strowman for the Raw Tag Titles. Cedric Alexander in the Cruiserweight Championship Finals against either Drew Gulak or Mustafa Ali. Kurt Angle and Ronda Rousey against Triple H and Stephanie McMahon in a mixed tag match. And two Battle Royals, WrestleMania Women's Battle Royal, presumably, although not yet announced, the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal, and Kevin Owens versus Sami Zayn in a singles match, although we expect that to be changed by Daniel Bryan somehow on Tuesday. So, Michael, I was posed this question on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast this week, and I want to pose the same one to you. What match do you think will go on last at WrestleMania?
My guess would be that we're going to get the Stephanie and Ronda Rousey match last. If it's not that, then I would bet it's going to be Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar. I think it'll be one of those two. The certainly the mainstream attention is going to be on the Stephanie match, and Ronda's still such a big name, and this being done in a lot of ways to really try and make Stephanie a star and kind of be this generation's Austin McMahon. But, you know, there's been, I don't know how true this is, there's been those rumblings about them being kind of concerned about where Ronda is at. So maybe if they don't feel comfortable in that, maybe putting Brock and Roman on last is the way to go. The reaction of that crowd, though, that makes you question that as well. I've heard a lot of a lot of people pitch the idea of Charlotte Flair and Asuka, you know, ending the show as well. I just don't see that happening. And I don't think it should at this point. I don't think they've built to that enough yet. Maybe next year if there's, you know, more of a build to a match like that. But it's kind of interesting because you've got a stacked show with a lot of matches, but I'm just not really sure what closes it. Whereas it's certainly a different animal than in, you know, the Steve Austin or Hulk Hogan eras where you had absolutely no doubt what the main event was going into it. What's your guess, Greg? What do you think closes the show?
I think it will be Lesnar versus Reigns, and I made the argument on Wade Keller's show that if this is truly the moment that you want to crown Roman Reigns, you've got to put him in the main event. If you put him anywhere else, it's almost like another half-hearted attempt to do it. You've got to put him front and center. You've got to put him in the main event, and you've got to take whatever comes with that as far as crowd reaction and things like that, because this is who he is now. If you want to put him over Lesnar and you want to put him over as a dominant force, and hey, you know, crowd reaction might not be a factor. If things are trending toward Brock Lesnar not coming back and WWE is kind of using him up, as it were, Reigns could win in under 5 minutes. And, you know, it would be a short WrestleMania main event, maybe unsatisfactory to some people, but all they have to do is look on the previous 6 hours of the show, and if they wanted top-notch content, they will have probably gotten it somewhere else on the show. So I don't think match needs to be this epic encounter between two Greek gods that goes 20 minutes. I think you could get Reigns out of there in 5 minutes, put him over Lesnar, put him over Lesnar strong, don't give the crowd time to get on Reigns' back, and bam, you've made the guy. And that's what they've been trying to do. And I think if you want to make the guy, you've got to put him in the main event. So a bit of a twist on that question. I asked you what you thought was going to main event. Now I'm going to ask you this. WWE comes to you, Michael Moore, and says, we want you to arrange the lineup for WrestleMania. What would you personally put on last? And also, what do you think opens the show? What would you open the show with? Now, I'm not talking pre-show. I'm talking WrestleMania proper. What would you open the WrestleMania pay-per-view with, and what would you have closed the show?
As for opening the show, my guess for opening it, and people aren't going to like this, and I don't particularly like it, but I think Nakamura and AJ opens the show. I think they're going to want to open with something hot, and it reminds me of those previous brand split years when SmackDown title, it seemed like, was always opening the show when you had Edge and Del Rio, and you had Daniel Bryan and Sheamus and those matches on there. And I kind of think, I don't want to say stuck, because I don't think stuck is the right word. Me personally, I don't think I wouldn't go that route with that match. As far as closing the show, I think you're right. I think Roman and Brock is the way to go. And my opinion is the shorter the better. They did that finish with Brock and Goldberg, you know, at that Survivor Series a couple of years ago. And I love that. I love just going in there and, you know, Goldberg very quickly and very decisively beats Lesnar. It had the feel of a big time heavyweight boxing match or UFC fight with a quick knockout. And I think really, if you're going to do that with Roman, I think what you said makes perfect sense. I know that the audience is kind of accustomed to back and forth 20, 30 minute matches. I don't think that's the way to go with this match. I think if you're insistent on putting Roman over, you do it strong, you do it decisively. And you have him just dominate Brock. I don't think if Brock is leaving, it makes sense. And even if Brock were to stay, I don't think it hurts him. I mean, Brock just seems to come back from whatever they put him in. And I think that you've just got to, like you said, the longer that match goes, the more the crowd is going to turn on it, the more opportunity you give them to turn on it. So if it was my call, I think what you said, I'm right in line with that. I think you put Brock over, you put Roman over, you put Roman over strong, and you put Roman over fast.
How real is the concern in your mind about the crowd turning on Roman Reigns and or Brock Lesnar in this match? You know, Is that a real concern that WWE should worry about if they put this match on in the main event, or will the crowd be so exhausted 6 hours in that they won't have the energy to boo Roman Reigns out of the building? I mean, what kind of reaction do you think Reigns and maybe even Lesnar will get in this match if it goes on last?
I think you'll get kind of the same reaction you got a few years ago with Brock and Triple H. Maybe even less favorable than that. I think the crowds are going to boo Reigns, and I think the crowd is going to boo Brock. And I don't think people wanted to see this match. I think people have been dreading this match for a year and had a lot of time of building up negative feelings towards it. So I think, yeah, absolutely, it's a real possibility that the crowd turns on it. As for what that means, I don't think it means a lot to WWE. I mean, if this is quick, they put together the match, Brock or Roman wins, it's strong. Even if the crowd's sitting there booing, you know, they sweeten it up later on, and in their highlight packages later on, they just show Roman going over clean. I don't know, as long as it's a short match, I don't know that it really matters if the crowd turns on it. Short of a massive walkout, you know, every 70,000 people getting up and walking out of that, I don't think it matters in the long run if the crowd turns on it. I think Roman is what Roman is at this point, and actually, more accurately, I think Vince McMahon is what Vince McMahon is, and you're going to see, as long as he's in charge, this version of Roman Reigns, whether people like it or not.
What's your take on the strength of the lineup as we see it so far, and how does it rank to previous last couple of years WrestleMania lineups?
A lot of the matches don't really appeal to me all that much personally, just because Brock and Roman doesn't do anything for me. AJ and Nakamura is obviously going to be a very good match, but we saw that match a couple of years ago at Wrestle Kingdom and probably saw a better version of it, but still going to be a really good match. I'm not a fan of all the triple threats that they've done. I think that this shoehorning everybody onto the show really hurts the show. I mean, you just get so many multi-man matches and so many people on there. But that said, talent-wise, I mean, they have such a stacked roster right now, and it's crazy when you go back and look at especially like the mid-90s WrestleManias, WrestleMania 11, where you have Undertaker and King Kong Bundy, and it just felt like WWE didn't have enough of a roster to put together a full show at times. And now here you are, and you've got your pick of every wrestler in North America, pretty much. The matches themselves just really don't appeal to me all that much. I think there's that intrigue of what are they going to do with the Ronda match, although the first time that Ronda sells an armbar from Stephanie or anything, I'll turn the show off at that point, I think. But, you know, the tag matches, I think, will be really good. I'm not a big fan of the multi-man matches, but I think they've done enough with, yeah, the Usos and the New Day have such good matches together. They've got such good chemistry, and they've kept the Bludgeon Brothers pretty strong this run. So I think putting those three teams together will turn out something really good. And then, you know, like we talked about with the Braun match, it's so up in the air, but Sheamus and Cesaro have been a really good tag team, and have had some really good matches. And I think this run has done wonders for Sheamus. I mean, he was so stale coming out of that, the League of Nations and everything. And this partnership with him and Cesaro has been really good. So maybe they transfer that over to, like we said, Braun and Elias or whoever it may be. This show kind of feels like the last couple Manias have felt, and that Roman's in a spot that people don't want to see, and you've got a lot of talent on the show. But there's not that show-stealing, got-to-see-it match. You know, going back to the really last, what I thought was the last really good WrestleMania match and moment, Daniel Bryan having that big victory at the end over Randy Orton and Batista, just phenomenal, just an amazing moment. But there's not that personal issue or that match that's going to be so good. I guess Nakamura and AJ probably is for a lot of people, because they, you know, let's face it, a lot of people didn't see that match at Wrestle Kingdom a couple years ago. What about you? What do you think is, how does this stack up?
You know, I think it's a strong lineup. You know, I think so. Like you said, Styles Nakamura should be good. I'm anticipating Miz, Rollins, Balor to be good, even though it's a triple threat, and I'm not, as a rule, in favor of those when they can be avoided. Charlotte, Oscar really intrigues me, and I think it'll be a really good match. Same with Cesaro and Sheamus against Braun Strowman and whomever he chooses. Angle, Rousey, Triple H, Stephanie will be the spectacle match. I don't expect the quality to be necessarily good, but you know, it'll get WWE the mainstream attention they so desperately need. And you know, just like you said, the SmackDown tag title match, I assume it'll be coming down to the Usos, New Day, and the Bludgeon Brothers. So, you know, I don't think there's going to be any necessarily five-star matches on this show, but I think you'll have a lot hit that 3 to 4-star range. And that's still going to be a really good show, I think. And if you're okay sitting through 6 or 7 hours, then then you know you're on board with this. And I think it's a pretty strong lineup. WWE, like you said, Michael, it does have a very strong roster. And you know, this is without some guys on the injured list right now. This is without Dean Ambrose. This is without Samoa Joe. This is without some pretty heavy hitters that could be included in the card, but aren't because of injury situations. So it'd be interesting to see how things came down if everybody was truly healthy. But that won't happen this year. Before we close the shop this week, I want to
add one more thing.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, sorry, Greg. I didn't mean to step on you there. If you don't mind me, I just want to add one more thing.
No,
I think one of the things that I like about this WrestleMania is it feels like a reset to me almost. I think last year, before the show even started, I think people had a pretty good idea of where things were going for the next year and were not all that excited about it. And this year, it does seem like things are fresher because you are going to have Samoa Joe coming back. You're going to have Dean Ambrose coming back, who really was in need of a refresh. I think Seth Rollins right now feels like better than he's been in a couple of years. So I think people have said, let's get through this. Let's get this WrestleMania done. Let's, you know, crown Roman and here we go. And you know, I know a lot of us aren't necessarily looking forward to that, but beyond that, it does really feel like something fresh is around the corner, I think.
And the last couple of WrestleManias have felt like there's been too many rematches taking place at WrestleMania. And I don't get that sense with this card. There does seem to be a lot of fresh, if not first time matches, then matches that have a little twist on them that we've seen before.
Yeah, absolutely.
Before we go, I want to run down Impact from this past week. Abyss made his return via the Sinister Minister, James Mitchell. Josh Matthews revealed as Matt Sydal's spirit guide, and he was given Sydal's grand championship, was Josh Matthews. The Feast or Fired match took place. The cases went as such. Petey Williams, Moose, EC3, and Eli Drake all garnered cases that will be revealed this coming week on Impact on Thursday night. Also, Allie versus Sienna for the Knockouts title, Abyss versus Congo Kong in a Monsters Ball match. It was announced that Impact and Lucha Underground would be working together at WrestleCon on April 6th, WrestleMania weekend. It'll be Impact versus Lucha Underground. One match announced, Eddie Edwards against Jeremiah Crane, which is the Lucha Underground character of Sammy Callahan, who injured Eddie Edwards with the bat to the eye, an accidental bat to the eye that aired on last week's episode of Impact. On the indies this week, the New Japan Cup semifinal saw Tanahashi over Juice Robinson 2 days ago. It will be Tanahashi versus Zack Sabre Jr. in the finals of that tournament. Rumors swirling today about Rey Mysterio to Aerolucha, the new Lucha promotion based out of Nashville run by the Harris brothers. It was announced via the Tennessean that not only had he signed to wrestle there, but he would also be part owner. And that story has been reported to be a little overblown. He has the opportunity to do that, but has not quite signed on to that yet as far as having points in the company. This past weekend on the indies in AAW, Keith Lee defeated Moose. ACH and Jushin Thunder Liger teamed up to defeat David Starr and Trevor Lee. And in more David Starr news, he lost the WXW 16-karat gold tournament final on March 11th to Absolute Andy. So that's one of the bigger European tournaments out there. So that will do it for Wrestling Night in America for this week. I thank my co-host, Michael Moore. Michael, tell the fans where they can find you on social media.
Best way to get a hold of me is follow me on Twitter. My ID there is mmoorewriter, W-R-I-T-E-R. You can email me, michaelmoorewriter@gmail.com. Look for my columns in the Torch, and all my contact information is in there as well. And Greg, thanks for having me on. It's been a really good time, and I hope we can do it again sometime.
I think we can, Michael. Thanks for joining me, and thank you all for listening. Remember, we'll be back here on Sunday night, March 25th at 8 p.m. Eastern live. taking your phone calls at 515-605-9345 at pwtorchlivecast.com. Of course, you can find me on Twitter at Greg M. Parks. And if you're not a VIP member of pwtorch.com, what are you waiting for? Here are some details about how you can be a member of PW Torch.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free editions of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, the Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer, and there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip.
No.